What's up, guys? Welcome back to the WPC Plus. I'm Pierre Camus. With me is Nicholas Gott, and we're here to talk about must-avoid players. And we've already done two parts of must-have. We tell you who you need to draft, and now it's time to steer you clear of the landmines. Now, let's just clarify. We say avoid. We don't mean must-avoid like the plague or other viruses that are going around. Not quarantine yourself from these players. You can't. You know, no matter under any circumstances, own these guys. That's not what we're saying, right? These guys aren't going to totally implode. We're just saying, based on their current ADP, based on where we have them valued, we're going to fade them. But avoid just sounds so much sexier in the title than fade, right? So, I mean, that's what we're all about, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. All day.
He's like, yeah, sure, whatever you say. All right. So, who are guys we're fading and you probably should avoid because probably not going to deliver the type of investment that you would want in these drafts. Let's start with you and a big name guy. The mighty Thor has fallen. No Syndergaard. He's your first avoid. Tell us why.
It's one of those things. It's not a void because he's bad. It's a void because he's still being drafted like it's 2016. And he hasn't pitched like that for a couple of years. He's got an ADP of 57, 58 right now on NFBC. I have a good value on him. Running ATC through some STB calculations, I got him like a top 90 value. But that's an over, 2.5 round difference. And looking at Thor's numbers, he's done pretty much the exact same thing for 2 years in a row now. He has a 24% strikeout rate. It's not the 29% strikeout rate of years past. I guess it could come back. He's still got the velo. He's still got good pitches, but for 2 years now, it's been 24%. In 2018, he had a 3 ERA. Last year, he had a 4.28 ERA. He had a 4 Sierra last year. We're still drafting him like 2016 when he had a 2.95 ERA, 29% strikeout rate. And I'm not going to pay the price for him because I can get those numbers from a lot of guys and not have to take them in the first 8 rounds.
Yeah, a lot of guys kind of get by on reputation. We remember that one great year. You remember when he was going to be the next great pitcher. And at this point, it seems like he kind of is what he is. It's interesting because, like our own Scott Engel wrote up about him a couple times early last year when he was struggling. And, I mean, there's so many theories, right? Why is he struggling? And some people thought, well, it's the ball, right? He's had some bad luck, and that was some theories. And, his grip isn't... A lot of these pitchers, I think, were kind of excused last year because, the new ball, apparently, supposedly the new ball, like the grip was different. So with certain secondary pitches, it didn't come out the same, right? Do you buy any of that or do you think that's just an excuse?
No, yeah, I buy quite a bit of that. Like there's been too many complaints by too many different pitchers about, we talk about the juiciness of the ball. But less talked about is the seam, how they were not raised as much and the ball was slicker and they changed the rules on how you could rub mud on the balls. I get that. Like, I bet it's super hard to pitch a slick baseball, along with whenever anyone makes contact with it, it gets hit like it's a racquetball. So yeah, I'll buy a lot of that, more than just, I think that's the under talked about thing besides the juicy ball is that all seem to be slicker and the seams seem to be lower. That's tough. But he was kind of like that in 2018 too. His swinging strike rate just keeps going down. It was 14.2% in 2016. He didn't pitch very much in 17. 2018, it was 13.6%, and last year it's 12.5%. Until I see otherwise, I'm going to assume that the Syndergaard we've seen for the past 2 years is about the Syndergaard we're going to get. 24% K rate, a 6% walk rate, and a 3.75 ERA, 4 ERA. Like, great. Those are good numbers. That can earn you some profit in fantasy, but not if you're drafting him in the top 60.
Exactly. You're not shooting for fine or kind of good when you're, you know, looking at your SP2, somebody in that range. So, yeah. And a guy who I think definitely not going to get as many strikeouts as you'd like. We already know that. But also, I don't think the ratio is going to quite be there is Mike Soroka. And I've been talking myself out of him more and more because I kind of was going with a herd at first. And I had him, you know, in that same range as everybody else. And looking more, and especially, I think to me, what did it is I kind of did a comparison with him and Fried. And I'm buying into Max Fried a little bit more. And I'm selling on Soroka because, first of all, we know that the strikeouts aren't going to be elite, right? He struck out 142 guys, 174 innings. Never been a super high strikeout guy. So you rely on the fact that he's going to, you know, get you really good ratios. But let's take a look. Now, again, don't want to just say, well, bad luck, or good luck. This is somebody who was really good at limiting hard contact last year. You know, doesn't put a lot of runners on, so that's helpful. But looking at his expected stats, talk about last year, his expected batting average was pretty good, 264. But there's a big difference between performance here. And I just think this is a guy that, I mean, based on what we saw, he's going to be good, but he's not going to be, I don't think, taking a step forward to elite, which is kind of where he's been drafted at. I mean, he had 268 ERA. That's obviously really good. 111 whip. But I don't know. Nick, do you think that people are kind of buying too much into his, you know, performance last year, thinking that he's going to take the next step forward, but maybe there isn't another step for him to take?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know how much more of a step there is to take. And one, I'm with you, and I'll take Max Fried over Soroka given performance and draft price all day. But Soroka, most of his value, he's not going to strike out more than 20%, unless something could change. He's young, I guess. But all of that fantasy value last year was wrapped up in the 2.68 ERA and the, you know, low whip. And looking at, you know, you mentioned the X stats, but then just looking at his, you know, the ERA was great, but a 3.85 Sierra is not as great. And 3.85 Sierra tells me that that 2.68 ERA is going to come way up. And if it comes way up, then you are left with a pitcher. He has a 3.5 ERA, 3.3 with a 20% strikeout rate. That is not worth his 100 ADP he's got going on right now. I think too many people have gotten, they're overweighting that. The ERA, they see the fantasy value of, I guess Kyle Hendricks is probably the god of this group of pitchers that give you lots of fantasy value because their ratios are good and they're innings eaters and they don't have to strike a whole bunch of people out. But ERA is fickle, and I find it highly unlikely that Soroka will be under 3 next year. And if he's not, and he's not striking anyone out, he's on a good team, so he'll get you some wins too. But there's no way I'm paying his draft price. Like, I think he's good. Like, I like him around. You know, if it was 130, and he's sitting there, then yeah, give me some Mike Soroka. But if I need to pick around 100 to roster him, no way.
And I'll tell you, I'd rather have a guy like Robbie Ray, who I know a lot of people try to avoid because, you know, he walks as many batters as he strike out, it seems, but he's going to give me those strikeouts, right? He's going to give me that, I know for sure. And, I mean, it's not like he completely obliterates your whip, right? I mean, it's not that bad. 1.3, 1.4, that's okay. But if you surround him with enough decent pitchers, you know, you can live with that. But I know the strikeouts are going to be there. And if Soroka goes down to an ERA in the threes, that's not that different from Ray, who can keep his ERA under 4 at least. And again, I'd rather go with something I can count on a couple rounds later too. So that's my
Opinion. Definitely. It's like when you look at these you know, pitchers or batters that gained a lot of their previous value from one or two categories. I want to be able to really rely on those. I'm fine with those guys getting, you know, one or two categories, but I know that I'm what I'm going to get from Robbie Ray. I know he's going to deliver on what I'm drafting for, which is strikeouts. I don't, if you're drafting Soroka, you're drafting him for his ratios. And I don't know that given all the other peripherals around those ratios, I just find it unlikely you're going to get that. And if you're not, if a player's not going to deliver on the couple of things you're drafting him for, then why are you drafting him?
That's a great point. By the way, Robbie Ray tweaking his delivery a little bit this offseason. He's probably going to lead the league in ERA too. So just a little help for you guys too. Let's move on to some hitters here. A guy you know I'm avoiding just because he's a Marlin. That's my hometown anti-bias here, being a lifelong Marlins fan. Yes, thank you. So Jonathan Villar. So tell me, besides the fact that he's Marlin, why are we avoiding him? Because, I mean, we like the guys who can get us help in both power and speed. Probably he's going to hit at the top of the lineup just because they have nobody else. So, I mean, what's to hate here?
38.4 ADP on NFBC Champion League since March 1st. That's why. I can't imagine taking VR at that draft price. And last year was peak VR. Know that. 714 plate appearances, career high. 24 home runs, career high. 111 runs scored, career high. 73 RBIs, 40 stolen bases. 73 RBIs was career high. 40 stolen bases was second. 274 average. You're not getting better than that from Jonathan Villar. And it's very hard. If you could guarantee that he was going to get over 700 plate appearances again, yeah, sure. I still wouldn't draft him at that price, but I can understand where you're getting the value from. But given his history, I find it highly unlikely. ATC has him projected for 618. I think that's much more realistic. And this is just one of those situations where you're not only paying for a player's best year, which you generally do not want to do, but the I'm a big believer in the, you know, the scarcity of stolen bases and how valuable they can be. But I think his ADP is kind of reflecting a bit of too overreach on people panicking about stolen bases, thinking they have to get some and pay a premium price for it. And I guess the people taking VR around 38 are the ones that missed out on Mondesi and panic. But God, 38 is just, man, I don't know if I could pull the trigger on Jonathan VR. Do you want to draft him? He'll be fine, but man, he plays on a really bad team and he's Jonathan VR. I think we can't forget that.
He's in
the top four pick on Jonathan VR.
If that's something that will always hold true, he will always be Jonathan VR. I mean, yeah. He's a top 40 player. And that, you know what? I'm sorry. I admit this is bad, but I can't think of anything else. But like you talked about scarcity. I mean, isn't taking Jonathan VR in the top 40 of a draft kind of like hoarding toilet paper at this point? Like, you know what? Yeah. There's other ways. There's other things. I mean, you're just, you know, because everyone else is doing it doesn't mean you have to do it, right? Like, you could get
to
do it somewhere.
Like, just panic. Give me VR.
Don't panic. It's sorry. That's just the first thing that came to mind. And eggs too. You know, if there's a pandemic, you have to get lots and lots of eggs. But
eggs, VR, toilet paper.
There it is, full circle. So yeah, I get the seals thing, but you know, we've talked about the fact that other categories count too. So maybe even if he does steal the 30 bases, that doesn't necessarily make him a top 40 player. So yeah, I'm that's a hard pass for me too. And you know, I was lower than everybody else on VR last year, and I guess lower than I should have been because, you know, he came out with some pretty good stats, but I still didn't regret it because there's a lot of players who produce just as well. So speaking of speed, here's my guy, Whit Merrifield. Well, this is more of a legit concern, right? Nothing has really changed with him situationally, but if you notice that his stolen base totals have gone down. His sprint speed has gone down now for 3 years. He's not even a shoo-in to get 20 steals. I think, you know, he's losing a step. And I think you spoke to this last week. They have a new manager. Do you know this guy in Kansas City? There's a guy there.
Oh, yeah. You may have heard of him. He's Mike Matheny. He's from that's the right. distant past, and that's how he manages.
Is this going to kill Merrifield's value? I mean, is he going to let him run at least? Or if he does, I mean, because Merrifield's been caught stealing, 10 times, I think, the last couple of years. But his stolen base totals have gone down. He's still getting caught just as much. I mean, does he start seeing the red light?
I don't know if he sees the red light, but like you were saying, I think 20 is the most you can. That's kind of where I'm putting the ceiling. He finished with 20 last year. You look at ATC, got him projected for 22 this year. I look at Whit Merrifield, and he's like a classic, just a compiler. Like, he gets a lot of plate appearances and ends up with some pretty good fantasy value. But he's just kind of like, you look at his ETK stats, and it's, we've seen what we're going to get out of Merrifield. There's no more going up. We're obviously on the decline now. And he's like, you mentioned his sprint speed, like, he's starting to lose one of his carrying traits. And if he doesn't get near 700 plate appearances, then his value is going to drop a lot. And that 57 ADP is brutal. Like, once again, I like Merrifield at pick like 75, but at pick 57, just that's a premium pick. And it looks like you'd be taking a player that is at least a little bit on the downswing.
And, you know, the other thing is, this is not a guy. We had our friend Eric Samulski on another episode talking about must-have players, and he listed Brett Gardner, a guy who's kind of transforming his game. You know, the speed is going away, right? And so instead, he's opting for power. And hit 28 home runs. Now, he might not keep going up in that, but at least, you know, he's giving you that. And I don't think that Merrifield's a guy who's going to do that, all of a sudden start compensating with speed for power. So you're not getting, you know, something replaceable in those other categories. I mean, I think the batting average will still be there. And like you said, he's going to be at top of the order. The runs, like, he'll still score a fair amount of runs. But is that what you're hoping for from the top 50, 60 pick? You know, is no, you're drafting him.
Yeah.
Because of that speed scarcity. So 20 steals, I mean, you can get a guy who gives you 20 steals later on. So, I'm definitely avoiding him. And I've never really owned a lot of shares of Merrifield, to be honest. So this is an easy one
for me. Either. Yeah.
All right. I put myself here first. I guess I must have mixed the order. I'm going to go with Mitch Garver. And I think we could probably both agree on this, though. Last year was a career year, even though I know he doesn't have really a lot of other years to look at, but I mean, it's just not going to happen again, is it, right? He's not going to hit that many home runs. I mean, that just the home run to fly ball rate skyrocketed, and I think that drafting him as a starting catcher is still fair, but drafting him as a top five catcher is just totally unnecessary.
Yeah, same boat. Like, Mitch Garver is kind of the poster child for the juicy ball of 2019. You know, if the Twins are the poster team, then Garver's the poster child of that team. 31 home runs and 359 plate appearances with a 29% home run to fly ball ratio. Projection systems have him for around, 20 plus home runs this year. And that sounds fair to me. You get more batting average from Garver than a lot of catchers, so that's nice. But just like you never pay for the best year of Jonathan Villar, you should probably never pay for the best year of a catcher that had his best year in a year that the ball was obviously used for more offensive performance. Like, I mean, what's his ADP now?
Good question.
Oh yeah, a 130 ADP since March 1st in NFBC Champion Leagues. And granted, that's an NFBC and it's a two catcher. You know, it's two catcher format, so catchers are going to get a bump. But no, I'm usually pretty not anti catcher, but I'm less likely to get a top five catcher most of the time. And given his circumstance, he's done it one time, and he did it in an offensively huge year. No, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we just talked about the Royals. A guy like, you know, Sal Perez coming back. He's done it before multiple times.
Love him.
Going much later, and I'd rather wait and take him, you know, a couple rounds later. Or, you know, take a chance on one of these young guys like a Sean Murphy. I'm all about Danny Jansen this year. No, he's not going to hit 30 home runs, but that's okay. I mean, how many catchers are, realistically? This is one that's tricky. The thing with Garver is because a lot of times we look at the X stats and we say, well, I mean, he lived up to it. I mean, it wasn't necessarily fluky. His hard hit percentage was in the 97th percentile. His X slugging is 94th percentile. So, I mean, he did knock the cover off the ball last year, but the question is it repeatable? And like you said, career year. So even though he hasn't been in the league for multiple years, it doesn't stick out as a career outlier per se, but you have to also realize he's 29. I mean, this is not a guy entering his prime necessarily, right? It still, you know, screams to me of a career year. So,
yeah, definitely.
All right. Moving on. Now it's your turn to talk about a guy we've already talked about, and we're going to do it again. JD Davis. Is he a top 10 pick yet? I don't know. It seems like
he's got to be getting up there, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. He jammed his shoulder the other day before spring training shut down. So I think that probably bumped him out of the top 10, but he's probably top 30, at least in the general New York area, I'd have to say.
Yeah. No New York bias whatsoever. let's talk about Davis. I mean, again, look at the Statcast numbers. He hit the ball really hard, maybe plays himself to a near full, you know, time role this year. But what is it we're going to do to, or why are we going to avoid Davis? Because a lot of people are still really way too high on him.
Yeah. Like you said, you know, you go to a Statcast page and it looks real nice. Like he had a 47% hard hit rate, 91 mile per hour average exit velocity, finished with 22 home runs and 453 plate appearances, 307 batting average, 136 WRC plus. All of those are fantastic. His ADP is now up to 178, but he's not even guaranteed a full-time role. And that's the thing about these guys. Like, yeah, if JD Davis ends up getting full-time plate appearances and hits like he did last year, then 178 is more than a fair price for him. But you take a look at the Mets defense, and so they're going to have Jeff McNeil playing third because Davis is not very good in any position, really, but he was very, very bad at third. So he is going to the outfield. He's also not very good in the outfield. In left field, he had a minus 11 defensive run saved, a minus 4.7 UZR. So with the outfield, you have Conforto, who's got a spot no matter what. You have Nimmo, who, you know, a guy I really like, but I also like because he's not the best center fielder in the world, but he's the best center fielder they have. And they don't really want Conforto to play center, which is kind of the other option, you know, besides, you know, late inning defensive replacement that they just signed Jake Marisnyk. So I feel like Nimmo is more locked in because he's their best option at center. So that pretty much leaves left field for presumably JD Davis. But then we have the returning specter of Jonas Cespedes. And you know he's going to show up for, you know, 50 games and get hurt. And, you know, people aren't raving about him, but you also have Dominic Smith lurking around. And he's not going to beat out Pete Alonso at first, so they've been having him playing the outfield too. And he's not very good on defense in the outfield, but he took a step forward hitting the ball. And so I think there's a lot of competition for that left field spot. And I think people are kind of looking at it as it's going to be, you know, Nimmo's feeling that pressure of playing time too, but I think it's all Davis. And he will have to hit a lot to make up and stick in the lineup with as bad as his glove is.
Yeah, so a little optimistic, the projections here, based on all that.
Yeah, I mean, his ADP is up to – he's just one of those guys that has gained a lot of steam. Like, he has some sexy X stats. Like, he hits the cover off the ball. So, you know, not that big a surprise that he's risen up to 178. But, you know, ATC projects him for 481 plate appearances, 21 home runs, 272 average. You know, put that into SDP dollars, and I have him at, like, 225 in value. Yeah, if he – that's at 481 plate appearances. If he gets at 550, then, yeah, that's going to jump him up a lot. And, you know, he may be closer to that draft price. But, man, guys like this that, you know – anyone who has ever drafted a Rocky with hope that best player is going to get the most playing time, that's not always true. Unfortunately, baseball GMs do not run their teams like fantasy teams. And if he is just an absolute stone glove out in the field, then he's going to lose playing time. And so, yeah, I've taken him inside the top 200. He's a guy I like, but just have yet to like his draft price, and don't think that's ever going to happen before this draft anyway.
Now, you know, I wish more GMs would run their team the way I play out of the park and just boost those stats. I mean, come on. It's funny you mentioned that Ryan McMahon actually going right around the same range as J.D. Davis. So, you know, pick your poison there. And J.D. Davis ironically going just ahead of Chris Davis. If it wasn't for the fact that he qualifies at third base and will probably be outfield too this year, as opposed to Chris Davis would qualify as nowhere except for DH, that would be ridiculous, but it is what it is. New York bias rules again. And then one last guy.
He hits the ball real hard.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Besides that, he could hit enough, but it's just, I mean, what if against all odds, Cespedes comes back and is healthy? They're going to play him.
It's gonna. I drafted him in the last round of the TGFBI, so it's gonna happen. But
yeah, and if he's healthy, then what are they gonna do with the rotation? Like, I don't think they're gonna kick Nimmo out of center just because like everyone else is so bad in center. So I think Davis could get a playing time crunch sooner than later.
And it's a perfect segue to the last name we're gonna talk about. Speaking of a guy in New York, plenty of bias here in the outfield, Giancarlo Stanton. We're just not right. We just don't.
No. Like, just no. There was that one magical season. He put it all together and he stayed healthy and it was just fantastic. And it's not going to happen again because he's made out of glass and jello. He's never going to be able to stay healthy for that long. And man, you know, I hope he does. I've always liked Giancarlo. Seems like an okay dude that can just smash baseballs. But
just no. But Nick, the season starts in June. He'll be 100% healthy, and everything will be great.
Yep. For the first week, he will be 100% healthy, and then from that point forward, he will just go in a downward slope until he lands on the IL about 14 games later.
All right. You heard it. And by the way, glass and jello, not a good combination. Don't try it. Stick with the pineapple and the fruit. That's gross too. Why do you put fruit in jello? I mean, just can't you just enjoy the jello as it is?
Anyways. No, you got to get some healthy fruit in there.
All right. That's your must avoid dessert there is jello with fruit in it. These are our must avoid players. And again, not saying don't draft them ever, forever, just fade them at their current ADP.
All about price.
Yeah, it's all about value and price. And you guys know that if you ever listen to this, which you should. If you don't listen every week, hit that subscribe button right now, hit the little bell, and that's going to tell you as soon as one of these episodes dropped. We already broke down everything that's going to happen now that the season has been delayed. Who's maybe going to be a riser, who might be helped from this delay, who's going to be on hold in terms of winning their job, right, position battles, and even draft strategy, how this changes things, talking about starting pitchers. So check out that episode. And I already mentioned the one we talked about. We have must-have players, part one and part two, Electric Boogaloo, up there for you with our friend Eric. And that's all online for you at this fine channel, the Rotoballer YouTube channel. All right, guys. Thanks for watching.
Thank you.